Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
A Historic Murder House Revisited. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
We are going to go back to where it all started at 2475 Glendower Place in Los Feliz, Los Angeles, the Los Feliz Murder House.
Ooh.
We did this in episode 2 because we were so excited to kick things off.
Oh, it was a different time back then. I was actively dating. We weren't in a pandemic. Or a social revolution, a political revolution. Oh, we had so much ahead of us.
When I listened to some of the earlier episodes, you know, we didn't know what this was going to be or what...
We were just kids.
What people were going to like,
It was 2018. It was Obama's administration.
I was in my late to early mid-50s.
And I was 16 years old.
And that was weird. It was very weird.
It was very weird. I was about to take my ACTs.
And, you know, I wanted to kind of go... back to this because it has been a couple of years. Mm-hmm. There's new information.
Mm-hmm.
And I paid the house a little visit.
Oh.
And I had a very strange occurrence happen to me there, which I was not expecting because there's some people talk about there maybe or possibly haunted aspects of anything, but I don't think it's noteworthy for that. And nor did we ever kind of consider it noteworthy that it was haunted. I mean, creepy and, you know, a lot of dark history, but not particularly haunted. And I had a really strange situation there.
How come you are suddenly a receptor for haunted shit? Like, how does – I have been waiting my whole life to be visited, and suddenly Jason willy-nilly is being haunted here, haunted there, weird feelings here, strange apparitions there. What's – have you, like, opened – are you, like, meditating now or something?
When I was meditating, I had none of these issues. I think – I don't know. Maybe it's because I've talked about it, but I'm always have that shield of skepticism up, and I think that has – I don't know if it's perpetuating it, but I had a very we'll call it coincidental, but call it strange. I took some video, and you can find the video in – video version of this episode that I did on my main channel, which is youtube.com/Jason Horton, kind of rebranding that kind of just to keep it more ghost town esque or strangier esque. So there's a link in the description you can click on if you want to see the video of the house, but there's also going to be pictures that I took. And something did not want me to take that video or those photos, and I'll put it to you that way. I had a little run-in with somebody.
Whoa.
And we'll talk about that a little later. We just want to lay the groundwork in case you're not familiar, in case you don't remember our episode 2 of Ghost Town.
In case you're not familiar, I did go on a second date on Halloween to the Los Feliz murder house. I don't think that's neither here nor there anymore, but just to give you the background that you need.
And I'm going to ask you about that. About how that date, only because I remember when I first moved here, talk of this house because of the kind of suspended in time aspect of it. Mm-hmm. You know, the murder part is almost secondary to the vacant and abandoned aspect of it.
Yes.
I think so. It's just kind of a two-part story, I guess. Depends on what you're more interested in, but I think they're both really interesting, but I'll get into that a little bit later, because when I first moved here, people talked about it, and I think we were like kind of driving up there, but I wasn't at that time. This is many years ago, and I was like, I don't want to see any freaky stuff. I just wasn't in, but I actually now went purposefully during the day, went back, and it was strange. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Uh-huh. Also, want to mention really quick, our Patreon has some new tiers. We have a new governor.
That's right.
We have new bonus episodes. There's a bonus episode that's up right now. There's bonus episodes for one of the tiers for the Ghost Town Versus. You get a little, the new Ghost Town Versus.
How about that?
And there's discount codes for the merchandise. And if you want to help support the show, it really does help. We've really utilized it. Mm-hmm. It is patreon.com/ghosttownpod. And then that's it for that. Let's move on to the episode. Don't want to upset
anybody. Don't want to promote too much, but not too little either.
No, not at all.
I do want to say, though, there's something particularly creepy about things preserved in time. And I would love to focus on that and, like, why the psychology of that more in a later episode. But, again, I think we've done something on the Alexandria Hotel. Just things where they are untouched by other by people, like, messed with, like, a time capsule, especially one that is a room, and especially with the Los Feliz Murder House, a room that so much traumatic shit has happened in. That is so fucking scary to me, and I think that is kind of the crux of the mythology around it.
Because, you know, especially now in Los Angeles and maybe the town or city or wherever you live, mm-hmm. the want for people to just destroy something and put something up.
Yeah.
You know, which sometimes it's understandable. Sometimes it's not financially viable, or, you know, the infrastructure isn't up to date or code. But for a house to, for pretty much the better part of 50 years, mm-hmm. stay the way it is, yeah. especially in Los Angeles. And you know, now is it maybe even a different time. There's, like, kind of rampant kind of destruction of things. But it's a testament to the story mm-hmm. that it has been preserved for so long. But I'm just going to give a little quick for people that aren't familiar with this, they don't remember our episode 2, which I listened to the first episode,
I actually
re-edited it because it was so painful to listen to.
Thank God.
Mainly because of me, because I'm the one who's doing a lot of the talking, not giving a ton of information, and, you know, people. I was actually going to take our old episodes and just archive them, but then, you know what I realized? It's like, we're just going to have to live with it. You know, we're just going to have to live
with
our
shame. We are a time capsule.
Yeah, we are a time capsule.
Imperfect.
So, and some people are like, you haven't improved. What are you talking about?
Yeah, they're like, same old shit.
Yeah.
And you're right, maybe, in some ways. But
I talk, you know, a little slower.
I don't talk as much about myself, but I swear as much, I think. That hasn't changed.
No, that has not changed. I don't think anybody wants it to change. So we're going to go to 2475 Glendower in Los Feliz at about 4:30 to 5 a.m. December 6th, 1959. Cardiologist Harold Perelson lived with his wife, Lillian, three kids, and he brutally murdered his wife, attempted to murder his daughter, and then committed suicide. So he takes a ball-peen hammer, small hammer. Mm. He bashes his wife, Lillian's head in, kills her, goes to his daughter Judy's room, hits her, but it wakes her up. So the blow to her head, a ball peen hammer is pretty small.
Waking up to a ball peen hammer hitting you in the head and then looking up and seeing your father.
Yeah. Because, you know, I also think about it, it's like sometimes you ever, you know, it's a dream and you wake up and things seem so real. You're in such a strange arrested state that you don't know what is real. And it'd be very easy for her father, like he did, to be like, hey, calm down. Chill. Everything's fine. But she knew she woke up in a panic. And I think she saw her mother and then ran out of the house screaming for the neighbors. And the neighbors could hear saying, like, you know, don't kill me. Don't kill us. And it's got to be very strange. So I, looking back on this, I kind of wondered, you know, it was, you know, listening to some other true crime based things or just crime stuff in general. And sometimes it's, you know, you start by killing one person and then mm-hmm. somebody else sees us. You have to kill the next person. And then when does that end? And I wonder what the story would be is if Judy didn't get up, would he? Because obviously he didn't kill Judy because she'd be a witness to what he did.
Yeah.
He could have weaved any kind of story he wanted to, but I think it was the goal was to be done with this family. So if Judy didn't get up and run screaming out of the house, would he have just turned around, killed her, and then killed the other two kids? That mm-hmm. probably would happen. So she, you know, it's super traumatic and is, you know, somewhat of a,
yeah, there's a word
a hero
for that.
I
mean, there's a lot of studies around, it's not patricide, it's not familicide, but it's like a word kind of like that where a family head systematically murders the family and then kills himself. And there's a lot of studies around, like, why that happens. It's not wholly an American phenomenon, but a lot of it happens in America, and how it deals with, like, you know, men and family roles and ego and providership and just a lot of like ingrained dynamics. But certainly, I mean, like, obviously this guy wanted to kill his family and die. And he also, just from my recollection, he was a pretty, I mean, surprise to no one, very unstable and dealt with his own mental illnesses, etc.
I also wonder, now let's just say he successfully killed his whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Would he have necessarily killed himself, or could he have just weaved some story? Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, I'm a doctor.
Yeah.
What do you, like, somebody came in here and tried to rob us. I'm living in this nice house up in the hills, mm-hmm. and they killed my whole family. I just got home. I can't, you know, be in the mind of him or what happened, but I also, I saw that he had a copy of Dante's
Inferno,
the comedy,
Dante's, yeah, Divine Comedy,
Divine Comedy, opened on his nightstand the night that it happened.
Oof.
Very strange, yeah. Very, very eerie. And he had, you know, issues, like you said, with, mm-hmm. Mental issues and psychological issues, but also issues financially, which.
Yeah. Which, again, I think a lot of the times too, and I think I keep thinking about the Unsolved Mysteries episode too, that we covered a couple of them, not this one in particular, but about how that underlies a lot of masculinity and providership with a lot of men. And when they do kill their families, which again, that word is on the tip of my tongue, but I'm not sure what it is. A lot of it is like inability to provide, you know, financial dire straits, like money being tied to selfhood and just being able to be the patriarch of the family and not being able to do that anymore.
And who are you if you can't provide?
Exactly.
You know, like,
and
what are your worth?
The fact that nobody else in the family has any say in their fate just contributes to this like egomaniacal ideal of providership and fatherhood.
He got screwed out of a business deal with a partner with some kind of medical device, so he lost a lot of money on that. Mm-hmm. Judy got into a car accident with the other kids, not her fault, on Vermont and Los Feliz. So we know the bottom of the hill.
Yeah, that's still a pretty hopping area.
Remember that address because it'll come up later.
Ooh, okay.
It's a little foreshadowing.
Oh, boy.
You know, it was not her fault. So they recouped some cost of maybe the medical, but they couldn't recoup the cost of the car. So it was a lot of mm-hmm. financial things probably happening. He was, you know, somewhat sort of ill. And you find out, you know, he had a lot of coronaries. Mm-hmm. And the reason he had them is because he had tried to commit suicide previously a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
So after, you know, Judy's out of the house running, screaming, neighbors, you know, from being there, and you know, yeah. I don't know how dense it was, but it's in a cul-de-sac, which is kind of scary in itself because it kind of blocks off. But there's houses there.
There are. There's also a lot of trees. It's really private, surprisingly private. It's right nestled into Griffith Park. It's a really old part of town, and that is scary too because I think in a lot of ways you couldn't hear. Like, she was lucky that she was heard as she screamed and ran out of the house.
So when Judy's other siblings woke up, her father, Harold Perelson, said, "Go back to bed. This is a nightmare." And then he took 2 doses of Nembutal.
Nembutal.
And then 31 small white pills, codeine, tranquilizers, and was dead before the ambulances arrived.
Pretty good way to go, though, if you were to choose. I guess he's a doctor, so he would know that.
Yeah, I wonder if there's the stresses of being a doctor in the late 50s. I know like mm-hmm. there's high suicide rates with dentists. I don't know if that's changed.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I believe. For some reason, dentists have a high rate of suicide from what I remember. I don't know why, but there's a case for that.
Sticking your hands in people's mouths all day. I in my mind, if you're a white man doctor in the 50s, you're God. Like, you can do whatever you want.
But you know? not if you've made some bad decisions.
Yes,
maybe
business
is not going well. I mean, true. I always think the 1950s is like, economy-wise, things are booming, but maybe in the late 50s, you go to the 60s, times are changing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's more better doctors, more doctors, more competition.
Well, certainly better doctors than this guy.
He prescribed, you know, a cigarette for breakfast, a cigarette for lunch, mm-hmm. and a nice
six-pack for dinner.
And a nice sensible cigarette But you love that.
Actually would be very into that diet. I've been smoking a lot lately, admittedly, and it's not good. It's not good for my health, surprisingly.
That's what we found
crazy.
Out.
Crazy. Thank you.
You heard it here.
Modern medicine.
You heard it from us.
Oh, we are very brave, speaking the controversial truths.
We've never heard from Judy or the kids. I believe it. The aunts took care of the other two kids. And there is a letter that previous to this that Judy wrote to her aunt. It says, quote, "My family are on a merry-go-round again. Same problems, same worries, only tenfold. My parents, so to speak, are in a bind financially." So it's been probably weighing pretty heavy.
Yeah, God, my parents, so to speak, like they're barely her parents. That's so dark.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if she's, you know, she's 18, I think, like a pretty probably
moody teen.
Yeah. Or, you know, like anybody at that age.
Yeah.
So the house after this little break.
Today's episode is sponsored by Best Fiends. I have to tell you about Best Fiends. It's the game everyone is talking about. I love it because it's the perfect break from true crime research, weird history research, UFO research. It still really challenges my brain because it's a puzzle game and I love solving puzzles, but it's a casual game so it doesn't stress me out, which is perfect these days. And lately I've been using it as a fun way to connect with my friends and family while still social distancing like me. I haven't seen my brother in a while, so I've been playing Best Fiends with him, and it's fun to casually compete with him since we can't do it in person. Best Fiends updates the game monthly with new levels and events so it never gets old. Best Fiends does not require internet to play, so you don't need to worry about Wi-Fi access or using your cell data. When I need a break from editing, my go-to is Best Fiends. Engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Trust me, with over 100 million downloads, this 5-star rated mobile puzzle game is a must-play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Are you a true crime junkie? Do you like spooky murder stories? Or are you a weirdo that's into real life mysteries? Let's be real, odds are, if you're listening to us right now, you're at least one, and probably all. And if you're like us, you'll very much dig Sword and Scale.
Sword and Scale is the longest standing true crime podcast that combines 911 calls and interrogation audio to tell you real life stories that will chill you to the bone.
Real talk, I was recommended Sword and Scale back in 2016 before we even started Ghost Town. I was forever a fan. After I subscribed to Sword and Scale, I never went back. It practically invented a podcast genre back in 2014, years before other true crime podcasts became popular.
Sword and Scale's host and creator Mike Boudet expertly narrates each shocking episode to fully immerse listeners into a carefully crafted real-life story that proves that the worst monsters are real. Some of my favorite episodes are episode 121, where Neil Entwistle and his family mysteriously disappeared, and episode 107, The Case of Kevin Ray Underwood. I won't spoil them for you. Just give Sword and Scale a listen for yourself.
Sword and Scale is available bi-weekly on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe today and leave them a review. That's Sword and Scale, also available at swordandscale.com. Subscribe today and give it a listen. Sword and Scale, proving that the worst monsters are real.
Hey, everybody. Hello.
Hi.
Make this quick.
Hello.
How are you?
Very quick, very efficient.
How are you doing? Are you well?
That's right. How is it going?
How's it going? Just checking in.
We are taking your pulse and your temperature.
Yeah.
They look normal.
Please
say
good.
They look normal.
Do you even know what normal would be?
No, I have no idea. A cigarette? I took the temperature of a cigarette.
You have, your levels are 3 cigarette levels.
Yeah.
To get it up to a full pack.
Oh my God. Are you just at smoke? Did I just put my hand through smoke? I don't know. I've had a rough week. My cat had some medical problems. But again, I feel grateful and very privileged to be able to say that that's a problem of mine. Again, I hope everyone else is doing well. We're here for you. There's care packages. There's discourse when you need it. And we're here to give it to you.
And how are our mayors, Brandon Gaddis, Jeanette Link, Ben Forsyth? And we have a brand new governor.
This is so exciting.
Chris Witt is the Ghost Town governor, and there's only room for one governor.
There can only be one, like the Highlander.
So only one at a time. So unless Chris relinquishes his governorship,
uh-huh,
there can only be one. but we want to thank all our patrons and all of our political leaders mm-hmm. in Ghost Town. Thank you very much for the support. We could not do it without you.
Mm-hmm.
We have, probably as you're listening to this, the Ghost Town merchandise, I think, is 35% off, and you can find it at ghosttownpod.com/shop, I think. And we have promo codes for any other time for mm-hmm. our patrons. And there is a new, there's the new patron tier. You can yeah. check that out. I think it is Alderman. I think that was
Alderman.
Your
idea. That yeah. was my idea. Yeah. So Alderman. Who even knows what an Alderman does?
Alderman.
You do it now. You do it now.
I looked up Comptroller. I was like, Alderman sounds better.
That's
so
right.
you can find that. Bonus episodes. Episodes without any ads or talking.
Yeah.
How
that's
good
great.
Is that? It is patreon.com/ghosttownpod. Thank you for people that rate and review on Apple Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
We have essentially two YouTube channels. We have Ghost Town Podcast mm-hmm. and then youtube.com/Jason Horton for some
that's
video
you.
Stuff. And we have all the other stuff, TikTok. Yeah. Everything's Ghost Town Pod. Check it out.
It's great.
It's just more content.
It's an empire. You're helping us build a very underwhelming empire.
Empire, yeah.
Congratulations.
Yes, a non financially viable
mm-hmm.
empire. But thank you.
An empire all the same.
An empire all the same. So let's just get right back to it.
I'm down with that.
I'm excited to get back.
Let's get back to Los Feliz Boulevard. Let's get down. Let's go down the road, up into the hill a little bit, and hit the house.
So for the better part of 50 years, the house was untouched. In 1960, the house sold at an auction to Emily and Julian Enriquez. Now, what the house is famous for are these photos,
mm-hmm.
Christmas tree,
mm-hmm.
unopened presents, magazines, food. And from what I gather, there's people that supposedly rented the house because the Enriquez's.
Lots of S's and Z's.
They never actually moved in there. They just
bought the house.
Maybe at a steal.
Yeah. I mean, how much does a murder house go for? Either a lot or very little.
Well, for right now, the house goes for $2.5 million, I looked up.
Ooh, is that more or less than the Home Alone house?
No. I don't know what the...
It might be more.
Is that
more.
In Chicago?
Yeah. It's a big house in a Chicago suburb. But I think, yeah. All right. That says something to me.
Yeah.
That says something to me.
And, you know, some people said, well, it couldn't be the Perelson's house because they were Jewish. Why would they have a Christmas tree? But I was like, mm-hmm. I know plenty of Jewish people that still have a Christmas tree.
Yeah.
It's a cultural holiday thing.
I don't think that means much, to be honest.
Unless you're, I mean,
unless you're my parents.
Orthodox or something. Or yeah. are they?
My parents, if you had a Christmas tree in my parents' house, they would throw you out.
Okay.
So. I think, well, that's because my mom's first husband, which we didn't know about till I was in my 20s. Different story for a different podcast. But I always ask her why they got divorced, and they got divorced when she was 27, 28. She was like, he was a Jewish doctor too. Uh-oh. She was like, he wanted a Christmas tree over Christmas, and she could not. I mean, her dad is my grandfather's a Holocaust survivor. He's an immigrant. So like, I get how that hits home, but that's an interesting thing with the cultural divide between Jews, my parents and other parents, maybe these people.
They could. I mean, you know, you don't know the level, but
and
some things are, you know, there's, you could see magazines that are dated in, you know, after 1959.
Uh-huh.
So what is actually the Perelsons or not is a, you know, kind of up for a debate based on these photos. That's what some people say. We don't know. And also there's a rumor that these people that rented it on the anniversary
mm-hmm.
of the attack, that's when they essentially found out. It's like, P.S., you live in the Los Feliz murder house.
When do you drop that info on someone?
They did wait until they moved in. They literally abandoned the house. They were like, we're gone. We're out of here. And that's what was left behind.
Maybe. I mean.
Don't know.
That makes sense to me, too. All of this seems pretty plausible as to why it's so preserved. It's still terrifying. Whatever reason it is, it still terrifies me.
Rudy Enriquez, their son, he inherited the house, but he did not move in. And according to the LA Times in 2009, I don't know that I want to live there or even stay there, Enriquez told them. And he died in 2015. He had no children, so there was no one to pass it along to. And as of 2016, it was back on the market. And as far mm-hmm. as I know, and as far as what I've seen, it is still on the market.
Yeah.
According to, I mean, I, you know, I'm not versed in looking up Zillow, but it seems like it is on the market. And I've seen records that the price was $3.5 million. I looked, and I don't know how accurate it is, it says $2.5 million. It seems like a really good price.
Yeah, for the size of the house. I can't believe some murder person, some true crime enthusiast.
Or like Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Marilyn Manson.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Actually, it should be a celebrity, like a kind of a gothy celebrity should get it.
I believe, now this kind of crosses worlds, that Stassi Schroeder from Vanderpump Rules maybe wanted to buy that house when I was kind of looking things up. And I believe this is the house she was talking about, is that she wanted to get married there, live there. I don't know, whatever it is. I believe that she, that seems like her thing.
That's definitely her thing. I mean, she eventually moved into a house in the hills that had, I don't think, any haunted history to it, but it had beautiful granite countertops.
As it should.
I think, again, it's like, do you really want this? Do you really? And I know Stassi really leans into the whole like macabre shit, but like, it's kind of like why, you know, like I hesitate to look up the place that I live in's own history. I'm like, what am I going to find?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to fuck
around. We could be sitting in a murder house right now.
We probably are. If someone didn't die here, I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
But I'm not looking into it right now. Times are too tough.
I went to the house. I was like, you know what? I want to do this episode, but I want to bring
something
new dynamic. I was like, let me go to where it all started. Mm-hmm. And it is very narrow. You know, driving, like if there's like a, you know, there's things where there's a party in the hills, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's very narrow. You can't fit two cars side by side.
Yeah.
There's nowhere to turn around. So I go up there. It's a pretty overcast day. So it's a little weird, but nothing to write home about, as they say. Mm-hmm. I get up there and I see the house, and the facade is as it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of barbed wire. Mm-hmm. There's a Century 21 sign, so it is for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside, as I know and as current as I see, is pretty much gutted. Mm-hmm. So the inside is absolutely gutted. The outside seems to be pretty well preserved. It looks as it did. And, you know, to get up there, as I was wondering, like, did you have to climb anything? Because there's
okay, so here's what happened with it. So that's the same experience that I had, where it was like inside was gutted, outside looked great. There was a gate. Was there a gate when you went there?
There's a gate that seemed pretty well sealed shut.
Oh, see, when I went, the gate was not shut. There was a single rock holding the gate in.
Oh, no. This is pretty – I mean, there's
so
it's barbed wire.
The gate.
It's like a fortress.
Yeah.
Probably because of people like you and us talking about it.
Maybe.
And you went up.
We went up to the house. Yeah.
Which I mean, I don't know. If I wouldn't have done it probably during the day. I mean, I'd probably have to
– Yeah. It was pretty creepy. We had some alcohol within us to help with the courage to do that. I have some pictures that I'll dig up for sure. It was very – very creepy. But yeah, the gate was totally open.
Yeah. This is pretty, you know, you can see photos on her Instagram or post them on Patreon and such. Mm. I got a lot of photos. Now I wanted some video.
Okay.
So the process of me getting video is that the way I was parked, I can just roll down the window because I didn't want to get out, take up space, be intrusive. I wasn't really looking to make a huge scene. I just wanted to capture some video and some photos. So I go to roll down the window of my car, electronic windows, and it will not roll down. All the other ones, I'm unlocking, locking. Everyone else is fine. I'm like, this window does not want to move.
Hmm.
Whatever. I don't know what the problem is. No big deal. Open the door. I have to get out. Go to with my iPhone, my modern iPhone, to take some video. Camera will not press play.
Whoa.
It's weird because I have a lot of dreams sometimes that I want to take a picture or video of something and it won't work.
Yeah.
And that's probably a common, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm, you know, in school in my underwear or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just will not work. So I'm like clearing it out. Eventually I have to restart my phone. It works for like 2 or 3 seconds.
So you're just
and
like sitting in the dark. You're sitting in the dark messing with your window and your phone.
No, it's during the day.
Okay.
It's during the day. It's not that, you know, because I don't think I would be able to see, capture anything. So it's during the day.
Okay.
It's probably like 1 p.m.
Okay.
a pretty innocuous time. It's not the witching hour or anything like
that.
The video will play 2 or 3 seconds, and I'm like, what is... I'm getting really frustrated. And then a maintenance worker, because his truck was there, he comes out, and he goes to me. He's like, this house. And then he shows his arm, like, as if he's got goosebumps, and he goes, brr, and then walks away.
God damn it.
Yeah. So then the camera works.
Oh,
so I'm videoing. I get about 30 seconds of video just to show what it looks like, what it might be like to live there, the street. And then I get out of there.
Yeah.
Turn the car around. And I'm really upset about the window. I was like, I don't want to get this fixed. As soon as I hit Vermont and Los Feliz, remember I said that from where the accident happened, the window just goes down.
Wow. That is terrifying. Also, Vermont and Los Feliz is maybe like 3 blocks, 4 blocks from it, right?
It's pretty close. Essentially the bottom of the hill.
Yeah.
If you roll down the hill from the house, that's where you would hit.
Yeah. That is so creepy. Oh my God. I don't like that.
Yeah. So that,
I don't like that one bit.
What happened. So you got to realize you don't need to go there at night and have like a drunk.
No.
Double blind date there. You need to go there at 1 p.m. You got to go when it's your. A total square like me who doesn't want to bother anybody. You know, you were tempting fate.
I'm too thirsty. I'm too thirsty for all this. I go on Halloween. I go at night. Like, how fucking basic could I be? You got to go.
Tuesday.
Go lunchtime.
Yeah, 1 p.m.
Lunchtime. Tuesday.
Yeah.
Full stomach. Totally sober.
Nope. Intermittent fasting. Very empty stomach. I never eat.
All right.